It's a soundtrack, isn't it, to so many of our youth. I know it was the soundtrack to mine. If I say the White Album, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But did you know it was 50 years ago today, to this very day, that the album, the Double White Beatles album, was released? Well, to talk about the record and the Beatles in general, please welcome author Susan Shumsky. What do I say? You're in America, Susan.
I am, yes.
I was going to say good morning, but what is the time there?
It's 5 a.m.
Oh, Susan, I'm so sorry. I hope you're in your pajamas.
Yeah, I'm casually dressed, yes. Okay. I have not dressed up for the occasion, yes.
Thank you so much for talking to us at this unearthly hour of the morning. But you are, I mean, you've got a fascinating story of your own to tell, haven't you? But just tell us how you come to know about this particular period of the Beatles, the White Album.
Well, I was a hippie. It was the 1960s. I was a flower child. And by the way, so were the Beatles.
Yeah.
So I was living a parallel life to the Beatles. Those of us who were flower children were seeking spiritual awakening. We were seeking altered states of consciousness. We were following gurus such as Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, who wrote the book The Psychedelic Experience. We were trying to get nirvana through LSD. That didn't work out very well for me, and it also didn't work out very well for the Beatles.
No.
However, as we continued with our seeking, we found something called transcendental meditation, and Maharishi Mahesh Yogi was the founder of that.
And we have seen, haven't we, Susan, so many clips of the Beatles in India with the Maharishi. That was a period of time, of course, when they have all had the long hair and the beards. And you could see, why were you seeking that? And why do you think they were looking for that at that moment in their lives?
It was the time. It was when people were into this counterculture, this whole counterculture of hippiedom. And part of that counterculture, frankly, was seeking spiritual experiences. I mean, I was reading everything I could find about altered states of consciousness. I was reading the Buddhist scriptures and autobiography of a yogi, and I was reading books by Alan Watts, such as The Way of Zen and other books. And in Alan Watts' books, he said, you have to find a meditation guide. Well, in 1966 in Berkeley, California, you didn't exactly go to the telephone directory and look up meditation guide.
No.
But, so.
And of course,
there was a Transcendental Meditation Center, and Maharishi brought meditation to the West.
And of course, with the Beatles, that they'd gone through that period, I feel, in their careers when they'd had this complete stardom, haven't they? They'd been worldwide sensations, and they were actually, I think, quite frustrated musicians at that point, because every time they did anything, you couldn't hear what they were saying. Their lives had been completely turned upside down, so you can kind of understand why they were looking for some kind of inner peace, I suppose.
Well, that certainly makes sense. I mean, their concerts were definitely a circus.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, concerts are really different today, different kinds of speaker systems and so on. But back then, there had never been concerts with that many people. So it wasn't really organized in such a way that people, that even the Beatles themselves could hear themselves.
No, they couldn't. No. Well, it must have been incredibly frustrating for them.
Yes.
Sorry, Susan, I'm talking over you. I'm going to take some traffic and travel, and then we're going to play a Beatles track and then come back for some more chat with my guest, Susan, who has got up, especially in America, 5 o'clock in the morning, to talk to us about the Double White Album.
BBC Radio Lancashire.
Travel. Hi there, Chipman. We have delays still on the M65, the eastbound side, busy near to Lostock Hall. Watch out for queues to Clayton Brook there because of that accident we had earlier on. It's now cleared around Junction 3, but still a few delays there backing up onto the M61 at the roundabout. Quite heavy each head for Garstang Road. There was an accident earlier on the M55 at Junction 1 at Fallwood, so busy each head near to James Towers Way and onto the M55. All lanes are now open there. And quite a few train issues this morning. Preston to Blackpool South services. Buses are running for trains. Cancellation between Blackpool North and Preston as well. well due to this points failure, and we have services still suspended between Wigan Wallgate and Kirby due to a signalling issue, and no service operating between Preston and Ormskirk still with Northern due to several faulty trains. Any updates, give us a call. It's 0330 123 0181.
Start your day with Graham Liver at breakfast.
BBC Radio Lancashire.
Are you lecture?
No, me lecture, okay, I'm just tired.
You're fitter than what you look then.
If you were to get your hands on my big one, how would it change your life?
I'd be up and down like
lady. BBC Radio Lancashire. I mean this with the greatest respect.
I don't think you're about to be respectful, but, you know, he disappeared for 2 days, and, you know, that's gone to Accrington. I'm only having a job like you do, the only one lady.
Oh, I have a hard read, don't I?
Yeah, you do, you're looking loud.
Graham Liver, back tomorrow from 6, BBC Radio Lancashire.
Blackbirds singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbirds singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the light of a dark black
with Susan Chomsky, who is... Tell us whereabouts you are, Susan.
Well, I'm in the United States in the Eastern time zone, and at the moment I'm in Indiana.
Okay. So you say that as if you travel around a lot, presumably you do.
I do. I live in an RV, you call that a caravan, and I have no home base.
Okay. How does that work out then?
Well, it is possible to do that in the States, because we have very wide roads and places to park and so on. So
how interesting.
A lot of people they're what they call full-timers.
Full-timers?
Mm. Yeah.
So we're talking to Susan at the moment about the White Album, because at that time you lived actually in the Indian ashram, is that the right word, which is where the Beatles wrote a lot of the album. And you kind of got an insight into the words of some of these tracks. I just played Blackbird. I mean, is there anything, a story behind that at all?
Well, it's a very brief story, in that there were a lot of crows at the ashram, and they were very noisy, and they certainly didn't sound like those Tweety birds that are in the song. But yeah, and so when right after Paul had written that song and the White Album came out, he said that it was inspired by hearing the crows early in the morning.
Right.
However, years later, he changed his tune about what the song meant. He said that it was about the civil rights movement and a black bird, meaning a black woman, who was in the civil rights movement. So that's in later years, he changed the meaning of the song.
What are the songs?
It's a beautiful song. It's actually my favorite song.
It is beautiful, isn't it? In its simplicity, Susan, it is just lovely. What are the songs? Are there stories behind? For instance, Dear Prudence. I'm just going to play a clip of it. Hear very often, is it, Susan? So what's the meaning behind Dear Prudence?
Right, so Dear Prudence was about Prudence Pharaoh, Mia Pharaoh's sister.
Oh.
Both Mia and Prudence were at the ashram at the time, and Prudence had abused drugs and alcohol in her teen years, and had had some really serious problems with addiction,
right.
And yet spent some time in a mental institution. And then she went to India, and she was very, very into meditation. She was a very keen meditator and didn't want to come out, didn't want to open her eyes. She just wanted to stay inside her room and meditate day and night. And so people started to get concerned about her. Maharishi was concerned, and he asked John and George to look in on her. And in fact, she remembers John and George bursting into her room, singing Obladi Oblada and singing Sergeant Pepper. And she thought it was sweet that they came to speak, you know, to sing to her, but she just wanted them to go away and disappear because she wanted to go back into meditation in silence. And at some point during her stay there, she had a serious mental breakdown, and unfortunately. And so she had to be taken care of, and nurses were called in, and then she was conveyed to Maharishi's bungalow every day. And within 3 weeks, actually, she came back from the abyss, and Maharishi nursed her back to health. And she was fine at the end of her stay there. And then just as George and John were leaving Rishikesh at the end of their stay, George sent her a message saying that John had written a song called Dear Prudence for her. And she was worried about that because she was afraid they would make fun of her or something. But then when the White Album came out and she heard the song, she was very happy. It was such a sweet song.
Oh, it is. It's lovely.
Gentle song. Yes.
You mentioned the Maharishi's bungalow there, and there is a track on the album about bungalows, isn't there? Does that relate to him?
It does relate slightly to the bungalows. In fact, John said that one reason he called it Bungalow Bill was because of the bungalows that they were staying in the ashram, which was very simple accommodations. And when I was in the ashram, which was a different time than the Beatles, but when I was there, it was the same accommodations, of course. I was there in 1970, and they were just simple cinder block and concrete, just small little barracks.
Right.
That we stayed in that were very, very basic. But it's about a specific person, Bungalow Bill, actually.
Go on.
So yes, it's about a Rick Cook. He and his mom went on safari while they were in India. She was taking the course, and he came to visit her. So they rode elephants on this tiger safari. And they rode the elephants and made the tigers go into this kill zone, and then they were up on a platform, and Nancy Jackson, who was Rick's mom, she spotted the tiger, and Rick Cook, he's the one that shot the tiger, and then they came back to the ashram and told Maharishi about their conquest of killing the tiger. So they're telling this Hindu vegetarian yogi about their tiger kill. And John Lennon and several other of the Beatles and Beatles' wives were in the bungalow when they told Maharishi about it in Maharishi's quarters. And Maharishi was glaring at Nancy as Rick told about his conquest. And Maharishi said, well, are you sorry that you killed the tiger? And Rick said, well, I don't think I'll ever kill another animal. So he was...
Gosh, what a story. I'm going to play a little bit of it, Susan, just to remind us about Bungalow Bill. Susan, they take on a whole new meaning when you tell us the stories behind the tracks. Oh, my word.
Yes.
But one more clip. Is there a story behind Sexy Sadie?
Absolutely. That's a big story, yes.
Go on, share.
Yes, so there was a falling out between the Beatles and Maharishi, actually only between John and George and Maharishi, because they were the only ones left in the ashram when it got to April, because Ringo had left after 10 days and Paul had left after 5 weeks, but John and George stayed for 2 months. And Alexis Martis, otherwise known as Magic Alex, had been a hanger-on with John. In fact, he really had attached himself to John's hip. And Cynthia was concerned about Magic Alex. She thought that, in fact, she said, he makes my skin crawl. And so he had positioned himself as this great inventor. In fact, he was a TV repairman. But he had all kinds of fantastic inventions he was going to make, including making houses levitate, paint that would have stereo speakers built into the paint when you paint the wall. Crazy, crazy inventions. Well, he showed up in Rishikesh, and he was having an affair with this woman named Rosalind Bonas. And at some point, they started spreading the rumor around the ashram that Maharishi had made a pass at Rosalind. So... And at first, the Beatles didn't really believe Alexis, otherwise known as Magic Alex, but he finally convinced them that indeed it was true, that Maharishi had made a pass at Rosalind, and he managed to convince John and George to leave the ashram. And they did. They left the ashram in a huff. They were very angry. There were actually 3 reasons why they left the ashram, and this was one of the reasons. Well, when they were waiting for the taxis to come and fetch them, to take them to the airport. They're waiting there in the ashram, and Alexis had gone to get the taxis. John Lennon wrote a horrible song, which had expletives in it, and condemning Maharishi. And the song was called Maharishi. It was Maharishi, what have you done? You've made a fool of everyone. It had all these expletives. And then when George saw what... John was doing, he said, no, you can't say that. What are you doing? You're crazy. You can't sing those lyrics. And so John changed it to Sexy Sadie rather than Maharishi.
Well, we're going to hear a little bit of it now. Hang on, Susan.
Sexy Sadie, oh, broke the rules.
Sexy Sadie. And again, oh my word, Susan, how you changed the way you think about songs that were the background to so many of our teenage days. I mean, I was 13 when this came out, and, you know, I can remember absolutely loving it and had no idea, most of us in complete oblivion to what the words were all about. It's been, as you know, I could talk to you for hours, but unfortunately we're running out of time. You have written, though, haven't you, a book about the Maharishi and yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's called Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru, yes.
And in the book, do you relate to some of these stories?
Yeah, I've got stories about so many things. All the secrets about the Beatles in India, and also the real meanings of the songs on the White Album.
Right.
And not only about the Beatles, but many other celebrities that were around Maharishi at the time. It's a fascinating read.
Susan, thank you so much. It's been so lovely speaking to you. I'm going to finish with Back in the USSR. Is there a story to that?
There is indeed.
Oh, cool.
So that was written by Paul.
Yeah, cool.
By Paul, and it was meant to be like a parody of Beach Boys sound.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was. And Paul went to breakfast in Rishikesh one morning and sang the song to Mike Love, who's the head of the Beach Boys, the lead singer of Beach Boys. He was there in Rishikesh with the Beatles. And so he played the song for him, and Mike Love suggested that he talk about girls from Ukraine and Georgia and different parts of Russia, which would be similar to California girls, the way California girls talks about girls from different parts of California. So that was Mike Love's contribution to that song. And so the song was a combination of Back in the USA by Chuck Berry and California Girls by the Beach Boys, and also a little bit of Fun, Fun, Fun in there by the Beach Boys. So it's...
Wow. Do you know... Yeah. This interview has been fun, fun, fun. Thank you so much, Susan. It's been a delight to chat to you, and thank you also for getting up at some unearthly hour to speak to me on the radio. Let me just remind listeners that the book, which is Maharishi and Me, is out now. This is The Beatles.
Come and walk.
And off they go, the Beatles and back in the USSR. Wasn't that a fascinating chat with Susan in America?